Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I usually start this with a little fun thing, but I'm going to right now, guys. Welcome to YWC Football Talk, where we work as hard as the commas and Skip Bayless's tweets. Free agency has started in the NFL, and look, it hasn't gone the Patriots' way, but it hasn't gone the way of they haven't spent the money. But I will say this, and Sophie and I were talking about this, not only are they handing out team-friendly contracts, but they're also bringing back, I know they're bringing back people's like, oh, they're just running it back. I think the running it back with the certain weapons is very important for not just on the field chemistry, but off the field chemistry as well.
Anyone who knows me has been, I'm just happy they signed Michael Wenu. I was waiting for that report to come across my screen because I knew losing some key offensive tackles or even offensive linemen was going to be hard. He wanted to come back too. That was the part that was killing me about this whole deal, is just that he had specifically told me a few months back, like, I want to stay where I got my first start. The place that took a chance on me, I want to stay. And so it was just confusing me how nothing was getting done. But when I saw the deal that he got, I think that is so fair considering what offensive linemen are getting paid this time around in free agency. So that, for me, has just been the top of my list in terms of the signings the Patriots have made.
Yeah, I agree, but in the interest of good conversation, I'll pick a different player. I'm really excited they brought back Anfernee Jennings. That I was pumped about that because he obviously played at Alabama, so I'm a little biased in that regard, but he really came on strong this year, especially given that he didn't really get to play a whole lot his first 3 years, right? He played a bit as a rookie, ended up on IR for a little bit, missed the entirety of his second year, just didn't really have a role, really emerged as like that run-stopping, edge-setting end that they've been looking for since Rob Ninkovich, probably, right? Like, yeah, because they were trying Chase Winovich in that role and it didn't really work there. But so he's like that run force that they've been waiting on. He's not much of a pass rusher, but it was just so apparent when he was on the field, because anytime a team would run to his side, you're just like, oh, 33 is right there to make the play. So, yeah, obviously super excited about that. I thought he was someone who should have been back, and he got himself a nice little deal out of it too. So I'm excited for him.
With Anfernee too. What I remember too is, like, being in the locker room, every guy was so complimentary of Anfernee Jennings and just like what he brought to the team and everything he did, which I think says a lot about the guy he is. And again, this is another one that is a very team friendly contract. It's a 3-year, $12 million deal, but has a maximum value of $24 million. So he can double his money, but it's incentive based. So he has to play hard to get that kind of money, which again is, the team benefits and he benefits.
Yeah. The contract I was going to say that I was most surprised by still, bar none, Josh Uche returning. I thought for sure out the door, but $3 million with a potential earnings up to $8 million. I'm just like, this is a true, true bet on yourself contract. I feel like he just had unfinished business to do. And I know we criticize Belichick's drafting a lot, but when you look back at it, besides the kicker whose name I forget from the 2020 draft class and the tight ends,
Justin Rohrischer.
Yes, him. Yeah. Keen.
Yeah, Dalton Keen and Devin Asiasi.
Asiasi, who I always remember because I remember watching the week. I always go back to this game, week 17 of that season, being like, where the hell is this
team? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was exciting.
Devin, Devin was working out with DeMario Taekwon and Kendrick and Bailey this past week. He was
Was he there in that contingent from all the videos?
He was there doing that medicine ball challenge with them.
Yeah, I love Devin Asiasi. I thought for sure, for absolute certain, that he was going to develop into a real time player. But time kind of just ran out on him, health issues. I thought he looked good in training camp 2 years ago, and then he just disappeared, missed like 3 weeks. And by the time he got back, it was a little too late. And he obviously was on the roster that year, playing behind John New and Hunter Henry, but never really got the chance to like stick.
I know one tight end. I know a lot of people were kind of weirded out by the Austin Hooper one, which kind of came through the middle of the night. But I'll say this for him, if you can't beat him, join him. You know, obviously he was on the 28-3 Falcons team. So I'll say that. But I'll say this as well for Hooper, who's a guy who's really been down the depth charts. As a tight end too, I don't know if I'd take him over Farrell Brown just because we've seen what Farrell Brown could do last year. But over what we saw from Mike Gesicki, I definitely think I would lean more Hooper just because – he's got the experience, and as well, he's familiar with the Dan Pelt system. Like another player whose name is very fun to say and is based on a song. I don't know how good he's going to be, but when he makes a play, I'm probably going to scream Packy Tacky every time. So I'm just going to throw that out there as well.
I tweeted that out the minute, and like my parents are coming to me like, what did you mean by this tweet? Like, what is this? But then I have like all my friends messaging me like, that was pretty good.
I got it right away.
Yeah, I didn't really see that coming. He's a fine player. He doesn't really do it for me personally. I really don't think he's a very good tackler. And no matter what, I just don't like linebackers who can't tackle well. Because I'm like, that is like the one thing you're supposed to do. Like, you're a linebacker. You're supposed to tackle. And he can't do that very well. He's a really good coverage player, though. And obviously, he plays on special teams. But no one wants to really hear about special teamers and all that, especially with the release of Chris Board. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, the special team thing is over. And then they immediately got a special teamer. And I'm like, it's not over, man.
It's got their special teamer.
Yeah.
The Chris Board release was surprising to me, too. That one was like, you go from a starter to releasing him, it almost felt like ushering out Bill Belichick, the Bill Belichick way.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see how that works, because I think in general, Patriots fans have this idea that the Patriots are unique among the league with regards to special teams value, right? People are like, oh, other teams don't have special teamers, and I'm like, every team does, right? Like, literally every team has at least three just core special teamers outside of their kickers, right? You always have a gunner. You always have, like, a coverage specialist. Like, every team has one. But for whatever reason, Patriots fans are like, oh, yes, it was Bill, and Bill's the only one who likes special teamers. And I'm like, no, they're gonna sign some guys who are just going to come here to play special teams. They're going to draft a couple guys, especially on day three, whose primary thing is going to be like, hey, can he cover kicks? Yeah, well, guess what? He has a job. And that's just kind of, the nature of the game. Like, I know that offense rules the world, and defense, like, secondary, and no one cares about special teams. But when you have a bad special teams unit, suddenly everyone cares. That said, they signed Chris Board to improve that special teams unit. It really wasn't that much better. So I understand cutting him. Money-wise, I don't think he was making that much, though. So I don't really understand it from that perspective. I remember when it, when the release was announced, people were like, oh, yeah, it saves on cap. And I'm like, not that much. He wasn't really it wasn't like they were paying him $10 million. So yeah,
the other thing too with the special teamers as well is they do have Brendan Schooler on the roster, so it's like they have that core special teamer there. Also just saw the Chad Graff that you're talking about with T. Higgins, so we'll see where that goes. I was hoping Calvin Ridley was going to break during the recording, but obviously I messaged both of you that and it happened like 20 minutes later. But no, with this team, like I was telling Sophie this, I feel like there's a section of Patriots fans and one reporter in particular who are super pessimistic on this team. That, it's just, oh, they're bringing back the same core. Oh, they're just running it back because we saw how well it worked last year. But with this team, it's never been about, hey, get ready and go for it in 2024. I was telling before you hopped on, McGarvin, I said this to Sophie, where I feel like Houston ruined that in the senses of, hey, look, oh, hey, they got the quarterback. They're good to go. New England's going to do the same thing. When in reality, that's just not how it's going to go. Are we going to be going out there next year and signing a Danielle Hunter? I doubt it. But for now, I just look at this team to where I want to be like, hey, be competitive in 2024 to where the next year you can truly take the leap. And even though everyone with the money, look, we all knew this year was going to be about spending it internally, not externally, to where next year I was looking ahead. There's a lot of pretty good free agents next year, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So if next year you want to make that big splash outside the organization, go right ahead. To where this year, I think if they're going to make it, it's still going to be through trade or through the draft.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a multi-year rebuild. I think that's obvious to a lot of us. Although, for whatever reason, especially today, I've noticed a lot of people don't seem to think that. There are people who are like, oh, yeah, this could be like an 8 or 9 win team. And I'm like, 8 or 9? Where? Like, this, no way. People are just kind of clinging to the whole, oh, well, they lost a few games by, you know, by one score last year. So, you know, you could just flip those matchups and, you know, this is a pretty good team. And I'm like, that's not really how it works. Like that nope. Doesn't really go that way. You don't just pick up where you left off, and you're not going to be the same team regardless. And I also think they won. You know, they won 4 games. They won a couple games they had absolutely no business winning. So I think if you're going to say, oh, just flip the matchups they lost and flip the matchups they won too, it's not going to be a very good team. It's going to be a multi-year rebuild because they need an entire offense, right? And you were never gonna buy an entire offense. Like, that's just not a thing that happens. But they need a left tackle. They need at least 2 wide receivers. They need at least 1 tight end. I know they signed Austin Hooper, but please give me a break. They need running back depth, right? Because Ramondre Stevenson is entering a contract year, and Antonio Gibson, who they signed, we didn't mention, a third down back. He's a really good pass catcher, but he's not a between the tackle runner. You're not gonna rely on him. You're not gonna give him the ball 20 times a game. Talking about, hey, run us to victory. That's not really a thing. So I think they're just an obviously quarterback left out the big one. Obviously they need a quarterback. And even if they do draft a quarterback this year, and I suspect they will, and I expect them to, and I hope they do, that it's not going to be like a, hey, we got our quarterback. Let's just, you know, let's go out there and do it. Cause that's not how it happens, right? Rookie quarterbacks come in, they may play well individually, but their teams still aren't very good. Right. We look at the Joe Burrow Bengals, right? They came in and, from like immediately you saw, oh, whoa, he's going to be really good. And they still lost a ton of games. And then he got hurt and then they, you know, continued losing. But even when he was playing, you were like, oh, I see why they drafted him. The team stinks. Most teams like drafting a quarterback high stink. It like, that's just how it is. So I don't understand this idea of like, oh yeah, we're just going to draft our guy and, you know, we're going to just spend all this money and it's going to be great. You're not going to buy an offense. You're going to need to draft and develop these guys, and that's going to take some time. So at least 2 years, I think by the end of year 3, you really want to look and see, all right, here's what we have. You know, we're going to pick up the 5th-year option on whatever quarterback we have. And next year, we're really going to, you know, really going to get after it with a deep playoff run, not just the, oh, you know, we went 9-8 back into the playoffs and got clobbered by the Bills or some shit like that.
So I totally agree with what you said about Antonio Gibson. I wanted to point out this part. The one who I think could be like a sneaky sort of option behind Ramondre is Kevin Harris. Yes. I think he really came into his own towards the end of that season. He was getting a lot more reps with Ramondre with Ramondre on IR towards the end of the season, and Zeke is the number one. And Harris got in the end zone. He was getting open. So I think he's like actually a very solid option and could be like, you know, I know that's not what fans want to hear right now, is like, you know, they might not make that big signing behind Ramondre, but I think that's someone who actually still has a lot of potential. And if given the opportunity, he could show what it's all about. The other thing that I thought was very ironic that you said, or I don't know if ironic is the right word, but you talk about those games they have no business winning. And the first one in my mind is the Buffalo Bills win.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it was Mac Jones and Mike Gesicki in the end zone, both of which are no longer on the Patriots.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Another one that comes to mind is that Denver game. I mean, that was like a perfect storm of bullshit on Denver's side, because that game should not have been close, and they just kept it close. And it was like, all right, well, I guess if you're going to give us the win, we'll go ahead and take it. So that was weird. Pittsburgh played their second worst game of the year when we played them, right? Coming off that loss to Arizona, we went there, we played them, and we beat them there. They played their second worst game of the year and didn't play a game that bad the rest of the way. So it's just like, yeah, you can say like, oh yeah, these games were way close. And it's like, yeah, but flip all the matchups. Like, look at all of it in totality. That was another game where it was just like, they very easily could have lost this one by like 13 points. You know, same thing with Denver. They could have easily lost by 10 or whatever the case is there. It's just not so easy as like, oh, just, you know, a few other things go right and we would have won 9 games. Like, no, chances are you're going to win like 5 or 6. And that's just all right because the team is rebuilding. Like, as of right now, the team does not have a quarterback. So the fact that there are people who are like, hey, we could probably win 9 games without knowing who's going to be the quarterback, blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind.
So one point I want to make, one that's still my cover photo on Facebook, the celebration from when they when they did that. I remember how excited I was just because we beat Buffalo and holy crap, Mac ran a 2-minute drill. Yeah. The only games I really would ever want to take back is the entire month of November because, well, let's point it out this way. One, Sophie traveled halfway across the world to watch a masterclass in disastrous football. The other being the Commanders game, which was off Juju's fingers, and then the Chad Ryland missed kick and just Mac playing terribly. So that's the only thing I have to say about the 23 season. No, I want to say this right now, and I'm always going to stand by this because – if you look at the Patriots 2020 to 2021, because 2020, look, there was just a lot of games they had no business winning either. Baltimore's the one that comes to mind. 2021, they had a rather cupcake schedule when you look at who they were playing. And, like, one game I look at for that season was the Charger game, you know, the Adrian Phillips pick six. Carolina, they got Atlanta, who played really bad. And I think they had, what, two pick sixes against backup quarterbacks in that game? Felipe Franks and Josh Rosen?
Yeah.
The 25-0 game on Thursday. To where this year, you're playing Herbert, you're playing Burrow, you're playing Chicago, who might add is probably going to be really good this year as well, even though rookie a quarterback. But you have that. You have the AFC South, which besides, I know Tennessee signed Ridley, but we'll still have to wait and see. You also have the NFC West, which there's three really good teams there, and then the Arizona Cardinals.
Do you think that the Bears are going to be so good solely because of Caleb? Like, what's your
defense?
Okay.
Yeah, they have a really good defense.
That's where I thought you were going, because I was like, I don't believe in their offense, but that defense,
even with a rookie quarterback. So I was curious if you were going for offense or defense on that one.
It's also I really like them getting Gerald Everett at tight end two on that team to compliment Cole Kmet. One thing I will say about the Bears too is Darnell Mooney's nice. Is he $39 million over 3 years nice? Absolutely not. With the Bears, I think they're going to be a Pittsburgh Steelers team where they're going to win a lot of ugly, 17-10, like just offense turns it over, but then the defense can do – if the defense doesn't break, they will win games. And when I say the Bears are going to be good, I mean they're going to be like 8-9, 9-8. I'm not saying that they're going to be a 10-win team. I've also been on record and I don't know any more about this. This is before Kirk left, that the NFC North is one of the better divisions in football going into this year because – Detroit's going to be good. Green Bay is going to be good. Minnesota will wait and see, but Sam Darnold has the best team he ever assembled. Even though I feel like they'll be aggressive to trade up in the draft. So that's where I get it with Chicago from, where if the defense doesn't have a day where they get walked on, like look at Pittsburgh last year where Arizona walked all over them and they lost. But then they had games like against Baltimore, because that's the one thing too. I know one game was meaningless, but Pittsburgh swept Baltimore last year.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, I'll say – if there's ever a no-brainer move in free agency, it was Derrick Henry going to the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah. So that's just where I get the Bears' logic from, is just they're not going to be good, but they're no longer, the laugh and point. Kevin White's going to catch it and go down to the 1 yard line, and the Patriots barely squeak out a win. Yeah, Bears.
Try dating someone from Baltimore when you had both the Steeler losses. I was like, I'm not talking to you. I'm too afraid after the Ravens got swept. But then I'm getting text message after text message with the Hunter Henry signing. So,
but
one or not signing, Hunter Henry, sorry, you know what I mean?
Derrick Henry, yes. Derrick both Henry. Henrys. There is one signing, though, that happened in this whole AFC North that I absolutely love that Raven fans hate. Patrick Queen on the Steelers is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Raven fans hate it, but I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I don't love Patrick Queen as a player, right? I think he's just fine. I think he's a really good Pittsburgh Steeler kind of player, though. Like,
yes.
Very, very physical, right? And he gives you that, like, kind of enforcer over the middle vibe, and I'm like, that's cool. And you put that in Pittsburgh, and it just feels right. So I'm excited about that. Also, I love when players just like canoodle in the division, because I think it just creates really good storylines for the games, right? Because you are already going to watch, Steelers Ravens. Everyone always watches Steelers Ravens. Now you got a little extra motivation, like, oh man, it's going to be like the first time Patrick Queen is back in Baltimore, or the first time that the Bengals play the Ravens and they have to go up against Geno Stone who moved over from Baltimore. All of these things, and I'm just like, man, I just love when there's that intermingling. Unfortunately, the AFC East doesn't really have a ton of that anymore. during the Tom Brady years, Yeah, well, I know during the Tom Brady years, there were a few, you know, a few years where it was just like, you know, they were just kind of passing around the same kind of guys, but they haven't really done that in like 4 or 5 years. And I wish that happened more, because like, who doesn't love a good player you can hate? Like, oh, this guy left us to go play with the rivals. Fuck him. You know, like, who doesn't love that?
I mean, Giants fans don't at the moment because obviously Saquon Barkley going to Philadelphia, which we
Oh,
also forget
that's love.
like
I love that move. In all honesty, I saw that news and I was like, I think because I just think like the Giants, there was so much controversy with what was going on, their ups and their downs with Daniel
giving Daniel
Jones.
Jones 160 million.
Yeah, that was rough. But I think him going to Philadelphia, where they're working on a bit more of like a winning kind of vibe, I think could really help him and will give him that opportunity that he's kind of been searching for these last few years. So I'm very excited to see that one. Plus, you know, I grew up in New England. What am I ever gonna really say, like, go Giants?
Yeah, right. Never.
Nope.
It also gives him the best O-line he's ever had. And
Yes.
I'm excited to see what Saquon Barkley looks like behind an O-line that's not letting him get hit in the backfield every single run. So that's obviously super exciting. We had a whole bunch of Cowboys defected over to the commies, but that really doesn't matter because the Commanders don't really
They're
matter.
signing a bunch of people, and I'm like, what are you like? They're spending money, but you're not really. What they're doing right now reminds me so much of the 21 Patriots, where you're just throwing money at all these like mid-level players.
Yeah. It's like
Beyond excluded, by the way, I want to
they
say.
spent a lot of money, and I'm just like, have you gotten better? Like that's still the question I have in my mind. I know they added Bobby Wagner, and I think obviously he's very good. So like that's one where I'm like, oh, cool. But you look at like Doris Armstrong, and you know, just like, all right. Frankie Luvu, who they added from Carolina, he's a real good player. So I'm like,
Jeremy Chin.
that's cool. Jeremy Chinn, I'm just like, meh, like is he that much better than Cam Curl? Not really. So I'm just like, did you really get better? I guess not. But it's the first year of a new regime, so they're going to try to get their guys in as they kind of, you know, teach the system and kind of establish a culture. So I get it. You're going to have your, you know, guys from that you've guys that you've coached before. You're going to bring them in and kind of, you know, let them help you establish what you want to establish. But they're a weird team because I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't think they've gotten that much better. I don't think they're, you know, a quarterback away, right? Because I know they're probably going to go quarterback at
Yeah.
two. They're not really a quarterback away. I just,
The team that I feel like they're gonna go like 6-11, you know?
Yeah. And everyone's going to be like, oh,
Watch
why'd
them
you
next
sign all those
year.
guys? Yeah. And it's, they're going to have a lot of guys who are signed this year are probably going to get cut next year, you know, next offseason. And everyone's going to be like, what a terrible deal. You know, why did that happen? But all throughout this year, though, you're just going to hear, you know, for the next few weeks, oh, the Washington really won the offseason. Oh, they're doing great. And it's like, all right, not really. They just
Just give
signed a
it a
bunch of
minute.
guys.
But I want to go back to something because we're talking about Saquon Barkley leaving Philadelphia, but we've yet to talk about an elephant in the room of who joined the New York Giants. Now, a couple weeks ago, I read a tweet to you guys about a trade that was offered to the Carolina Panthers. Scott Barrett's the person's name, and he said this: if you combine the Bryce Young trade with the Brian Burns trade, the declining of the Rams offer before later accepting the Giants offer, the Panthers traded the 2024 first overall pick, DJ Moore, a top 10 pick last year, a 2023, two 2023 seconds, a 2024 first, and a 2025 for like round one pick in exchange for a 1 year rental of Brian Burns and a meaningless 2-win season. Bryce Young, who just had the second worst rookie season by any rookie QB since Vietnam, and the Giants 2025 round five pick. Ladies and gentlemen, the Carolina Panthers.
Sheesh. Yeah, y'all know how I feel about the Panthers. I like the team. Tepper bought it. Now I hate them. But like hate them from afar. It's like I follow their every move and I just hate it all. Like, like, you know, I'm one of those fans. I don't know. I just don't know what they're doing. I really don't. I know they went out and traded for Deontay Johnson from the Steelers, and
Yeah.
I think he's a little overrated anyway. They got rid of Dante Jackson in the trade, and he's really not that good either. So it's like, nah, all right, whatever. They added some interior offensive linemen, right? They added Damian Lewis from Seattle, and then they also added Robert Hunt from Miami. And Hunt's a good player, but I don't know. I think that team has a lot of needs, and Deontay Johnson and Robert Hunt isn't enough.
You know, one thing I think with the Carolina Panthers is, one, how's Bryce Young going to be able to see you all over the manpower now? And FanDuel decided to tweet out about the offense being like, this looks scary. And I'm like, define scary for me, FanDuel. What part of that scares you? The Panthers are going to be like a four. I think they're going to win like 4 to 5 next year, where they win a couple. Like, I could see them winning a couple games in December. And do you guys remember how in 2021, or this always happens every year, where there's always a team? I remember 21, though, was the Lions, where everyone's going to go and be like, oh, watch out for them next year. They won a couple games they weren't supposed to in December. And then the next year, they're just not that good again. So I can see the Carolina Panthers being that, because we all know this is just multi-year, multi-year, multi-year. It's not like Patriots multi-year. This is like multi-year, where it's like you're looking at like 2026, 2027. You know, that's how it is with the Carolina Panthers, because you have, now I would argue, you have one, I want to say, good team in Atlanta now that you finally have a quarterback who's not going to be stupid. You finally have the Saints, who are just, you know, they're the Saints, are there. They'll win their 8, 9 games and probably just miss out on the playoffs. Sorry, Dad. And then Tampa, who I think will be the same as last year, but I feel like everyone's going to think, oh, this is what's going to happen. And then Baker Mayfield's going to come out and be like, should we have given Baker Mayfield all that guaranteed money? I don't know. So the NFC South is a very intriguing division. It's the true definition of that dragon meme, you know, where there's like the scary looking dragon and then there's one like, that's the NFC South.
Before we go to Dynasty, the one thing we haven't talked about too is the Mac Jones trade.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
I feel like
right.
we should
And we haven't
definitely
actually
talk.
talked about Jacoby Brissett either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A whole pack grew by one.
Did you
A
guys
whole
know
pack grew by
Patriots needed a quarterback?
one.
I mean, you know what? Save the best for last, am I right? With Mac Jones
Sure.
getting. And I saw a lot of people laughing at this one, which what will Zach Wilson go for now? But I assume a seventh and like two balcony Broadway tickets. But with Mac, hold the clipboard the best you can. He's gonna play the preseason to where next year there's gonna be that like mid-level team who like is quarterback needy that's gonna be like, hey, we should take a chance. And I'm kind of like with the Minnesota Vikings, just with Sam Darnold. I could see that happening. But for now, Mac, go to Jacksonville. Who, I'll say this now, who besides Evan Ingram, who's really the top target in Jacksonville at the moment besides him and ETN? Because I know they have Zay Jones, but Zay Jones isn't really a needle mover.
Gabe Davis, who's also not a needle
Oh,
mover.
yeah, that's the thing too. I would have liked Gabe Davis, but not at that price tag. Good Lord.
Yeah, I would not have liked Gabe Davis. I do not believe in that man. So I was like kind of apprehensive because I talked a lot of shit about Gabe Davis in my time. And last time I talked a lot of shit about a player, the Patriots signed him in Juju, and I was like, shit. So I was concerned. They were like, oh, the
The mic
Patriots are
turned
in the
way
wide
up now,
receiver
so.
market. I know. The big man upstairs knows what he's doing. So I was concerned that they were going to bring in Gabe Davis and break my heart, but they didn't, and I was like sick. So he's probably their top target over there. I know that they obviously wanted Calvin Ridley back, and they didn't get him. I think they have to kind of draft a receiver, though. I know you have Christian Kirk, and he's a fine player. Zay
I forgot
Jones
about
is a
Richard Kirk.
fine player. Gabe Davis is Gabe Davis, and I don't know. I think they're like kind of missing someone, right, to take that next step. And even though they had Calvin Ridley this year, I think Trevor Lawrence and that offense as a whole kind of took a step back. So I think they're a team that could probably take a receiver in the first round. And I know they have needs elsewhere, especially on defense. I think they need a corner real bad. But I, yeah, they're gonna need a big time wide receiver.
I agree. The one thing, just in general about the trade, is I just like it. I like that he's getting out of New England and getting almost like a fresh start. That's all I'm going to
It is
say
home.
about this thing. He's home. He's going to a place where it's never going to be a completely clean slate. Everyone knows what happened in New England. It's all anyone could talk about. You know, New England's demise for so long. But he's going somewhere with a quarterback that he's familiar with from the draft class. And I think it's in the best, in any way possible, it's a clean slate.
Yes.
Yeah, I like the trade for Mac personally because I think it's probably good for him to go somewhere where he is just not going to need to play, just to kind of reset, kind of get his mechanics back under control, get that footwork a little sorted out. Because obviously by the end of his time in New England, that was like the biggest thing. He would just like backfoot everything, and he just doesn't have the raw arm to to just float footballs like that. So they kind of got to, you know, get him a reset, give him, you know, time to kind of work on his mechanics and then go from there. And doing that in a place that won't allow him to play is good. But on the other side, I am concerned though, because like we just generally don't see players who begin their backup era ever really come out of it, right? Like there are some guys who get like spot starts, you know, they're like, oh yeah, you know, he could kind of play here and there, like Marcus Mariota, but he lost that job, and he like lost that job, like he, that was it, like he's kind of just bounced around. He's, I know, you know, Atlanta tabbed him as a starter the year prior, the year before last, and watch that went exactly how you right that's a good show. It just didn't go the way it went. You usually just don't see quarterbacks come out of that. So I'd like to see it for Mac, but I don't know that we will, and that's all right. I think, you know, it's just really interesting with the whole Mac Jones thing, though, because there are people who want to, like, indict the entire organization, like, oh, the team let him down, and that's the reason he ended up the way he did. I think there is some truth to that, but I also think there's some personal responsibility that comes with that, right? Because, like, decision-making is on him, right? Like, on the whole, I think with Mac Jones, and I feel this way with a lot of quarterbacks who end up busting, weird phrasing, a lot of quarterback picks who don't end up working out, is that if the situation is bad, mm-hmm. you get a pass on the things you can't control. So his wide receivers being not very good, nothing he can control, that's not on him. Him throwing off his back foot into triple coverage, that is on him. Right. The offensive line not being very good, can't really control that. Him reacting to pressure that isn't there, yes. that is on him. You know, the team having no downfield element to their passing game, he can't control that. Missing wide open checkdowns, that's on him. So it's like there are these things where it's like, oh, we want to blame all the, you know, we want to put all the blame on Mac, or we want to put all the blame on the Patriots. And it's like, well, no, they drafted a quarterback and it didn't work. Like it happens. It's not like, oh, it's all anyone's fault. It's a combination of factors. I just don't love that, especially with regards to Patriots fans. It's just this idea of like, oh, Mac would have been this great player if the big bad Patriots hadn't ruined him, when we'd seen the same kind of issues that he's having now in his rookie year. And everyone will be like, oh yeah, but he was so good his rookie year. And I'm like, yeah, through the first 10 weeks, right? He came out of the bye and we started seeing issues with pressure. That we, Griff, you mentioned the Falcons game, the 26 or 25-0 game. 25. That was the first game that I noticed, hey, something's not great here, because they played a lot of cover one, but they blitzed a lot, especially off the slot. And Mac had a really hard time kind of like getting that under control. Like they sent the blitz and he was like, oh shit. And he would just throw the ball out. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. He's kind of having a little bit of a hard time with pressure, but you know, he'll work on that. He'll kind of improve. And we've seen through 2022 and through this past season, it didn't really get any better. Same kind of thing with decision-making under pressure. It was a huge issue down the stretch his rookie year. Right. And that, and we saw that because that's how teams just attacked him. They were just like, fuck it, blitz him. Like
Colts game.
Yeah, that was the game that came to mind. It was just like, they were like, hey, fuck it, blitz him. He will throw us one. And he did. He threw a ton of interceptions down. I mean, I think it was one a game. I think the only game he didn't throw one was Jacksonville. But I might be misremembering. But I think Jacksonville was the only game where he didn't throw an interception down the stretch his rookie year. And it was the same kind of thing of like, yeah, but if you just pressure him, he will become one of the worst passers in the league. And that just kind of continued throughout the entire time. So there were some signs of things that were like, kind of got to get that cleaned up, and it didn't happen. And that kind of stuff is not necessarily on the Patriots. It's just like they took a quarterback and it didn't work. I think it's just people are having a hard time with Mac Jones and his departure from New England, because it's the first time we've seen New England bust on a quarterback. So everyone's just like, oh my gosh, like I can't, how did the team let him down? And it's like, plenty of teams take quarterbacks who bust all the time. Like it happens. Like it just so happens that this is ours. Like it's the first time we've seen it, right? Because we had Tom Brady before that. And even the quarterbacks they drafted in the interim, you have Jimmy Garoppolo, who started, you know, who's drafted in 2014 and was a starter up until the middle of last year. You have Jacoby Brissett, who's still around and is back again at the Patriots. Like these are guys, they draft guys, and we've seen them work. So it's just, I think people are having a hard time seeing them draft one, especially draft one high, you know, pick number 15 overall in the draft. They see, you know, see us draft one high for it to not work for the very first time. Which is like, well, it must be the organization. It's like, no, they just took a quarterback who just didn't work here. That's fine. It happens.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I just say the Colts game because I feel like throughout that 2021 season, there was, like I said, there was a bit of a cupcake schedule. How it was like they faced the Chargers before we really knew who the Chargers were. That Dallas Cowboy game that year still pisses me off because I feel like Bill just kind of gave that one away. Yep. Other games I look at from that year, like the Tennessee game, like when you look at it, it was like, hey, they didn't have A.J. Brown. They didn't have Derrick Henry. And they were just able to run all over them because the defense really wasn't that good for Tennessee, even though they were the one seed. We kind of learned that in that game against Cincinnati. Buffalo, we all know about that game, 2 for 3, 19 yards. Everyone likes to make fun of them. The one game that I go to, and I saw Bills fans trending about this, but the Micah Hyde interception in the playoff game, everyone's saying, that's on Mac. You didn't get the ball in place. I'm like, no, no, no. It could be
that's a
little
bit
of it.
Great play. That was just a great play. Yeah.
That's great pass coverage. That's all it was. But I even look to like, for example, the Colts game where I feel like that Colts game was the true Patriots who they were that year. It's just that win streak was coupled with, like I said, a lot of cupcake games. And even the game against Buffalo, the home game the day after Christmas where, you know, hey, Damian, new father, I should mention, Damian Harris, 3 touchdowns. But in those rest of the performance, it was, hey, Buffalo was doing this, and New England was just trying to keep up, but he couldn't. So we got to learn very quickly about this team. And even, like, if you look at 21, there was just the bad – I don't know why they do this, but every time they've matched up Devontae Parker against Xavier Howard, guess what ended up happening? Xavier Howard got an interception. Even with 2022 as well, there was the Baltimore game, which besides the ankle injury alone, he threw some really bad picks in that game. Chicago, which the Jaquan Brisker interception, which I will go to the grave saying this, he should have never started that game. That is 100% that was on Bill. And then even to the one I look at this year where I officially threw the towel on him, like I said, Little Miss traveled across the country to cover the Patriots, saw him throw one of the most disgusting interceptions in the world while I'm watching on my phone at a charity event that my mom was helping run. So fun times ahead.
The Cowboys one?
No, the Colts.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, Little Miss traveled across the world to go watch and cover the Patriots.
That was tough. That was tough. I thought you were talking about the Dallas one though, when he threw across his body to
Ron Bland.
Holy shit! That's when I threw in the towel because I was like, oh no, you can't. Like, I understand that this isn't a great situation. Yes, and even that one where it's just like, cool. I understand it's not a great situation. Yes, you're feeling a little bit of pressure. Your guys aren't getting open. You just can't make a bad decision like that. Like that is just 100% decision making. It has absolutely nothing to do with anyone else on the field. Yeah. You were running right. You were running to your right. You turned. You threw across your body left to someone who was covered. And that's the worst part. He was absolutely covered. And I was like, what the fuck? What was that? Holy shit. Yeah, that's when I was like, all right, we're kind of all set on Mac Jones. Because like once your decision making goes down the toilet, I don't know that it ever bounces back. Right. Yeah. At that point, you're just known as someone who makes a decision, you know, who's just a poor decision maker. And that kind of bore out. Right. Like that happened. And that was like the first game where everyone was just like, ooh, Mac, what the fuck was that? Then he happened again against the Saints. And then from there, it just got way out of hand. And he just kept doing it. It was like, I cannot believe he's still doing this.
Did he win in Vegas too against Robert Spillane?
Yeah. In the Raiders game. Yep.
I was back. Sorry to cut you off, Sophie, but even the other thing I want to point out about that Raiders game is his inability to read Max Crosby coming in from behind him. Obviously, Max Crosby is Max Crosby, but still, the fact that he did that, and even if they hadn't won that game, the fact that they lost that game on a safety was just something that never sat well with me. And I'll say this, too, about the Saints game. Two things happened that day. One, as soon as that pick six was thrown, I was like, yep, throwing the towel, we're losing this game. Two, that's the first time, and I'll say this because it's my podcast and it's legal, but that's the first time I went to help that wasn't alcohol to get me through a Pats game. So just throwing that out there. I think you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Many a time this year. Many a time where I'm just like, all right, fuck it, where are the edibles? Because like this can't keep happening. Like if I'm going to have to watch through this, I need to just not be all the way here.
No, the one thing I want to say about Mac, I never truly threw in the towel per se on him, because I'm someone who, and it's different when, like, you know, you're watching a game versus seeing practice, or you're seeing, like, you know, what's being said or things like that, where it's like, this guy worked day in and day out, and I know that, you know, people are going to be like, well, it didn't show, or whatever it is. He was a hard worker, and I think it was less about throwing in the towel on him and more his confidence was gone. Mm-hmm. No one on this team had any confidence in him, and none of the fans had confidence. But when your own head coach, the guy who took the chance, who drafted you, who made you the starter over you know, Cam Newton, your rookie season, is benching you game after game and then going to the public and the media and not saying anything positive or not standing by you, your confidence is going to be shot. And I'm not saying that's on Bill. I think had Bill been going to the media saying, oh yeah, Mac's great, Mac's our quarterback, we would all been, what are you saying right now? Mm-hmm. It was, you know, so I'm not saying that's on Bill, but I just think you're in a place where, you know, positive reinforcement is few and far between. So when you do something well, you're not going to really hear it. It's just kind of what's expected of you. And because of how much was going wrong, his confidence level was down. You know, people are expecting him to throw picks rather than completions. What does that do to a guy's psyche?
Yeah, I think the Giants game was a really good example of that. Where was it, the Giants or the Colts? It was one of those two games where Zappy came in and threw it to the team.
That was Colts.
So it was the Colts game, because after the Colts game, he had the presser, and I remember he was talking, and I felt so bad because he was just like, they were asking like, oh Mac, what can you do, you know, when this happens? And he's just like, I don't know. And I was like, holy shit, like, that is a broken man. And it felt bad because you're like, this is just a kid. He's like 24, 25. He's like, this young man is just like, that's it. And it's so tough because, like, what can you do? He was sitting on the sideline, like, basically hyperventilating because he had no answers. He had no confidence in his own ability. And I'm just like, that is so hard. And I feel for him on that level, especially as someone who, like, liked Mac Jones, right? Like, not, he wasn't my preferred quarterback coming out, but I liked Mac Jones. So it was just like, damn, this is so tough. So it's like, but at the same time, you gotta stop throwing it off your back foot, brother. Okay. I just need you to stop doing that. Like, I think that that's probably what frustrated him more, is that he knows, like, hey, I can't do that. And then he goes out there and then he does it. And he's just like, I can't believe I did that. And it was always so tough because he'd throw interceptions and then grab his helmet. And I'm just like, I know that feeling. That feeling of like, I can't believe I just fucked that up. And you know you fucked it up. And there's nothing anyone could tell you for you to think, oh, I didn't fuck that up. You just know, like, yeah, I totally fucked that up. And it just looked like someone who just needed a good cry. But you're a professional athlete, so you're not allowed to do that, apparently. So, you know, you feel really bad for him. And then the worst part about it is we ended up with Bailey Zappe, who was no fucking better. And so I'm sure for Mac, you know, he's going to say all the right things in the media and all that and be a real good, you know, teammate and a consummate pro and all that. But I'm sure at some point he was sitting there like, this guy fucking stinks. And I'm on the bench. Like, that's got to be tough.
The one thing I never agreed with in the quarterback room was not giving Will Grier a true shot at a game. Will Grier should have gotten a chance. I mean, you said it. You know, Bailey was out there trying, but the results weren't exactly trying. The results weren't showing how much worse could it get in actuality. Will Grier was someone who had a lot of respect from his time in Dallas. So what was the harm in giving him a shot on the field? He never got anything. And that was one thing that always genuinely confused me about the season. I mean, obviously there was stuff that we weren't seeing or we didn't understand, but it couldn't get worse. So what was the holdback?
The ways I just look at it is through December on, because I remember I tweeted this in December, and it's like one of my tweets that went more a little popular, which was one step forward, two sacks back. That was Bailey Zappe the entire LA Chargers game, which, Sophie, sorry that you had to be there, because that game was just disgusting. Because that was even the Chargers, like, where it was, hey, not even 2 weeks later, they got their asses kicked by the Raiders and the entire staff.
They played badly against us, and we lost. Holy cow. Goodness, and that was annoying.
Kansas City, I don't want to give them the win, but Kansas City game was the one where, and I love that Sophie said it earlier, because I was kind of on the, hey, Kevin Harris for RB3, maybe just, you know, get a UDFA or the kid Dylan Lobb from New Hampshire, just because it would be fun. Dare I say
Kevin, he came out of the woods for that one. Sorry, you were talking about the Kansas City game. I couldn't help myself. Continue.
That's all good. No, because I'm saying with Kevin Harris, where it was like, hey, I know I had the touchdown to Kansas City, but then again, like, if it wasn't for that Bailey Zappe interception, who knows? I don't think they beat the Chiefs, but the game's not a 10-point game. They probably cover the spread. And then Buffalo, if it wasn't for some of the boneheaded throws, there's a chance the Patriots actually win that football game. Mm-hmm. New Year's Day, which also signed a contract, which I believe I mentioned this on Twitter. Ashley's view in regards with the Jalen Reagor one, where it seems like he could get cut. You know, it's one of those ones where it's kind of like James Robinson last year, you know, where it's like, hey, they're bringing him in, he may get cut. But the whole point of the Bailey stuff is, and then the Jets game. Same thing, too. It was a terrible game until Breece Hall decided, hey, I can run the ball really fast. To where I'm like, even still, Will Greer, I feel like it was just, you know, it was Mack or Zappy. It was Mack or Zappy. Now this year, rookie, Bailey, and Jacoby, I'm cool with it. I'm cool with the Wolfpack. He's going to be great to be there, even if he signs, like, you know, hey, another deal to stay here. Just be the backup. Even, too, if they want to do what the Chargers did, you know, start Jacoby week one, and then something may happen. Or if it's like you see a flash from whether it's Jaden Daniels or Drake May, go from there. The only thing I have to say is, and I believe I was always with Mac. I always was on the fence just because, you know, Alabama quarterbacks coming out have always never really panned. Tua is the only one that's kind of panned at the moment. I don't count Jalen, obviously, because he finished his college career at Oklahoma.
So I feel like Tua was a gradual.
Yeah, Tua was the gradual in it.
He like people didn't know the first year.
Is this a safe space? May I speak freely? I still really don't buy into Tua. I know. I know he played it, you know, played at Bama, and so I should have the bias. I just really don't. Like, when I watch him play, I'm just like, yeah, you're kind of like letting these guys carry you, and that's fine. I, you know, that's all good and well, and you know, that's obviously great for your team because you win games. He does not move me personally. He's not someone I'm like, if you put him on any other team,
you basically with him, and I'll say this too, I don't know if you guys sports gamble a lot, but if you do want to get into it, Miami Dolphin overs seem pretty good this year considering everyone they lost on defense. But when I look at the Alabama quarterback thing, like 2016, they won a national championship with Jay Coker. Did he do anything in the NFL? No, I don't think he's still playing football. And then there's Greg McElroy, great college analyst for ESPN, but still. And even A.J. McCarron, whose most popular moment was his now wife going viral at the national championship game in 2013. So that's the thing with the Alabama quarterbacks, where it's kind of like they come out of school. I have not hope, but I have some faith that Jalen Milroe can be the one to break that mold if he improves, but we'll see this year without Saban. But I was always skittish on Mack, and then when he came here, I embraced him. I was all in for him. And like I said, 21, 22, I was like, you know what? You have a time. I was always in that three-year window with a quarterback where, like, by year three, if they're not good, you got to learn to move on. And I'm really glad they're not doing the Daniel Jones bet on yourself thing, because if he has a flash in the pan year, and then obviously, look, it's different because Danny did tear his ACL. But then now there's all those concerns with long-term. We gave this quarterback a lot of money to where, I don't know if you guys have seen this meme with the Giants. I'm just going to go on that tangent quickly. You know the one of Homer where he's like skinny, but then there's all the fat just hanging in the back? It's pretty much like the Giants defense compared to the Giants offense right now. But with the Patriots, it's just, you know what? Out with the old, in with the new, whatever happens this year. And I'll say this too. I'm not an 8-9 win guy for this team this year. My ceiling is 6 or 7. I think like 5-12, 6-11, 7-10 if they get lucky. You know what? Next year, hey, draft again in the top 15. Because McGarvin said this on this podcast numerous times. If you're drafting in the top 5 one year, you're probably going to be there again. So even if they're in the top 5 again next year, even top 10, it is what it is. Because, hell, I would rather be in the position right now that New England's in to where, hey, you know, it's like it's coming. The future's coming. Meanwhile, you have all these teams in flux, like Buffalo, who, once again, McGarvin, because we haven't talked since the Purge, that Buffalo Bills kid who went viral for crying during the game. You wonder how he was doing last week.
I hope he's all right.
Yes. So with the Patriots, it's the hope of like they can get better, because when you look at the landscape of the AFC East right now, you have Miami where there's a lot of question marks, and Tua wasn't a real prove it year. You have the Jets where the quarterback doesn't want to be a distraction, but got caught seeing some super offensive things that I'm not going to go into. And then you have Buffalo, who is a team in purgatory right now, who thinks that, hey, Mac Collins is going to solve all our problems. So we'll see what happens with the Buffalo Bills. Mac, you don't like cats, which I don't agree with. And also, too, do not walk barefoot in Western New York. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. You might end up like the folks who attended the Chiefs-Dolphins games getting amputations because of frostbite. So with New England now, did they spend a lot of money? No. Am I still excited? Am I still going to root for this team? Hell yes. Because why? Because FEA, baby, and that's how we transition to the dynasty. Where I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this, the two best episodes, but there's one person on this podcast I started to think of as soon as a certain song started playing during everything.
Yeah, I know what you I know exactly the moment.
Little Miss Swifty. When
Yeah.
I've never seen that reporter before from the Boston Globe. I think her name is Alexandra.
Nor is that who that was? I didn't see her
Yeah.
name on the thing, and they just kept showing her, and I was like, is that Nora Princiati? Like, I all right, like I have no idea who it was.
I don't know, but the one person I got to I want to give an MVP to episode 7 and 8, and it's no one from the Patriots organization. ESPN reporter Bryant Howard.
Yeah.
He was fantastic throughout the whole thing. You know, the one on top, he was there, but then Tom Curran was just the wet blanket on the entire episode. I feel like for every positive thing, they mentioned him, and Tom just like was all the negative stuff. I'm like, Tom, don't do this, man. But
I didn't mind Tom. I think
I
Tom
like
brought a level.
Tom. I
I like Tom a lot. I thought he brought a level of like, what's the
brought it back
word?
to Earth.
Yes, that's the best way to put it. It's like this whole, you know, yes, you have Spygate, you have Deflategate, all that, but it's like this whole dynasty thing is about how dominant the Patriots were. And yes, they were this team that was like, holy shit, no one's gonna catch them. But what I liked about Tom Curran's reporting is it was like, it brought it all back down to earth. And it's like, no, this is not a team that's, you know, has like Superman and like Batman lining up on the offensive line. Like, no, this is a team that had that was beatable. They just always overcame stuff. It was like, here's how it happened, rather than it wasn't just this magical moment.
One thing I'll
Yeah,
say is, go ahead, McGarth.
just generally speaking, I like Tom Curran. I think he's a really entertaining person, right? I listen to his podcast just because, like, the way he delivers, he's so funny. I think he's so funny. And I know that he rubs a lot of people the wrong way because he could be really antagonistic sometimes. But I don't know. I just take it in stride. I thought he was, I personally, I thought he was a bright spot in the Deflategate episode,
Yeah.
because he added a little levity to a situ to a to a storyline that, looking back on it, fucking stupid, right? That was dumb as shit. And so he treated it with the level of frivolity it deserved. Like, it was a stupid thing that happened, and he did not take it seriously at all. Where it feels like a lot of times with these documentaries, anytime there's a quote unquote scandal, it's like this huge, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Oh God. And he's just kind of like, man, he was in there with a
It
needle,
happened.
taking air out the football. And I was like, all right, man, that's fun.
Take an arrow out the football. Well, there was the one line about the guy going into the bathroom with the
Oh
football.
yeah, was he taking
Yeah.
was he emptying his bladder, emptying the football's bladder?
When Curran
I'm like,
said,
all right, man, oh,
it was
fine.
perfect. I totally agree. And Tom's a reporter that, as a young journalist, I have learned a lot from and talk to all the time when I can at Gillette. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I like that guy.
You know what? I gotta take everything back just because, like, I guess when I viewed it, I was just like, I feel like it was him. One journalist I'm surprised we haven't seen yet is Mike Reese, honestly.
Yeah, what's up
Same.
with that?
I'm curious about that too.
He's covered the team forever. I know, I don't, Sophie, I don't know how tall you are, but I know Mike Reese is not exactly the tallest person in the world either, but he's been on the beat for like, what, 25 plus years? So that's the thing with him where I'm like, okay, I get Jackie McMullen. Michael Hawley, I didn't even realize he was a Patriots. He worked for the Boston Globe.
I didn't either. I thought he was just on TV.
Same. I know him because he's worked, I believe he works for NBC right now.
Yes.
But with the whole episode, one thing I'll say is I know they focus on Deflategate. I know people have been mad about skipping. 2015 is the season. I think that, you know what, maybe I know that it ended badly, but that team was undefeated up until Moff Putt against the Denver Broncos in a snowy Sunday night football game. So they were, I believe it was 11-0 or 10-0. So, you know, just skipping over that. But then I love how 2016 worked, where it was just comeback, 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 boom. And then that's when Taylor Swift's Look What You Made. It was just the perfect song, too. It's not even like this
Yeah.
whole like revenge
And
narrative.
it
It's
was
just like,
Taylor's version. It's not from the unreleased Reputation album. It was just so perfect altogether.
But I'm not even going into that because my favorite parts of episode 7 or 8 is the Malcolm Butler feature showing the clip
Yeah.
of Brian Flores, three safety, Malcolm going, and Malcolm just going, he's looking over here a lot. Just like I'll be
Yeah.
honest, I like leapt up from my couch and started clapping like once he said, like once that clip was shown. I'm like,
I just got
please show
chills
it.
again. Like
Yeah,
watching
I
that
was
clip,
just gonna say that. I'm
I
still not
just
over it.
Malcolm, go! You know?
thinking of that like one clip of him being like, he's looking over here a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. These were easily my two favorite episodes. They just kind of reminded me,
True
like,
Patriots, born
oh,
Patriots fans want it.
yes, that this it's exactly what I thought we were going to get in throughout the entire series. So that's why it irked me that they skipped over, you know, 03 and 04, because I was like, no, these are like the moments, like give us that like, oh, this was the defining moment, like, oh shit, like the you know, a Rodney Harrison interception in Super Bowl against the Eagles. Give me that. Like, that would have been, I mean, again, chill. It was just such a reminder, like, oh shit, I'm actually not over how sick that was when Malcolm Butler picked off, you know, Russell Wilson at the goal line. I got immediate chills and I was like, oh, this is still as fresh as the day it happened. The, you know, the Atlanta Super Bowl, the Edelman catch, again, chills. So I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. That was sick. I wish they had a defender on to do a confessional in that game, because that comeback was keyed by the defense, right? Like, not, it wasn't, well, one, they should have done Hightower, right? That's like my favorite Patriot of all time. So they really, really should have had him on there. But it wasn't just the, you know, the Hightower sack that, you know, kind of keyed it. You had the Chris Long drawing the holding call. I think that would have been something that was worthwhile to, you know, to kind of highlight, because it's one of those things that shows why the Patriots are so dominant, or were so dominant, and during their dynasty run, it was like the little things. Because the story behind that, which, you know, if you've watched the Do Your Job documentary, you know, the story behind that is, prior to the game, Bill had briefed him like, hey, this team likes to, you know, this refereeing crew, this officiating crew likes to call a hold whenever there's a rip move. So if you can get under, you know, under the tackle and get him to get his arm up near your neck, they're going to call it a hold. Other officiating crews won't, but this team, they've called it like 6 times this year. It's something they do. And so what happened? The Falcons are in field goal range.
Carl Jeffers.
Exactly. And now Chris Long hits it with the rip move and Jake Matthews gets his arm up just around the neck and they immediately throw the flag. And it's like, these are the little things. Like, these are the kind of things that we should be highlighting, because, like, these are the things that I wouldn't know that, right? Like, if I'm just like a casual football watcher, like, I could have been, oh my gosh, it's just a hold. But knowing that, hey, this is something they specifically talked about in meetings and they prepped for it, these are the kind of little things that you're like, oh shit, that is so cool. So I wish they would have, you know, focused on that a little more focus on the defense. But obviously I get why they didn't, because the entire setup, especially leading from, you know, the prior episode, the whole Deflategate saga, into this one, it was all about Tom Brady. So obviously you're going to hyper focus on the offense. Just a little more love to the defense would have been cool.
The only thing I'm going to say is, with that, which I totally agree, I would have loved to hear that. And I think what makes it more frustrating in that moment that we didn't hear those things is that the beginning of episode 7, that to me was so out of left field. I did not understand.
When they were talking about Putin in the ring with Rupert Murdoch, what was that about? That was so weird. It like opened like, oh yeah, Robert Kraft is amazing. And it was like five or six straight minutes. And I'm like, what?
What? Like something that they were like I was almost as if the Patriots were paying for this. And it was like,
that was so weird.
It felt way too out of place. You know, everyone's calling us a Kill Bill documentary, which I haven't seen that part yet. That might come in 9 or 10, but as of right now, I think, you know, I don't think it's been all bad on Bill.
Nope.
I actually don't have that opinion at the moment, but it was, you know, you could have taken that spot that you had the weirdest interviews and the weirdest stories that really meant nothing in the introduction of the show and put in the Chris Long interview about that call. That would have been great to hear. I would have loved to hear what Bill told them in the locker room and Long's, you know, feeling during that moment when he got the whole call.
Mm-hmm. Give me Dante Hightower getting the strip sack. Because even that play. You know, it's just like it all connects, because again, and we've seen the Do Your Job documentary. So it's like, all right, we know as Patriots fans, but if you're not a Patriots fan and you're just trying to like learn about the last great dynasty of the NFL prior to the Chiefs kind of doing what they're doing right now, these are the kind of things you'd want to see. That like the whole mentioning of like, hey, we lined up Dante Hightower this wide because Tevin Coleman had just gotten hurt 3 plays prior. We know that Devontae Freeman is not that good of a pass protector. Let's just rush someone over him. And if we line him up wide, he won't see him in time. And everything that they had talked about on the sideline transpired. Like, again, these are just like the things where you're just like, if we're going to talk about the greatest dynasty in league history, like let's talk about it. Like, come on. Like, we don't need 6 minutes of like, oh yeah, Putin stole my ring. And then they did absolutely nothing with that information. It was like, at the end of it, I'm just like, well, did you get his ring back? Like, what the hell?
That's just it. It's just like, we would have loved to know like the X's and O's, like the mechanics of it. Like, obviously, how do I say this? Like, even the one part we haven't mentioned yet, But do you know who's over there on that sidelines? That's Freddy fucking Krueger. And I'm allowed to say it because of
Yeah.
that was such a powerful quote from Pioli, because who, by the way, another MVP of this entire series.
He's
Like,
been good the
he's
entire
great.
way through.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But just different eras and everything like that. But him just knowing, like, guys, this ain't over. Like, you're going crazy now. You're happy now. But, and also, too, like, even there's a part about, I know there was an article where they were interviewing various reporters in the box. I know Doug Kyan was mentioned in it from that Super Bowl where they're all talking about this. Sophie probably knows about this. The part of the Boston Globe where it's just Robert Alford in the distance, Tom Brady just laying down because he tried to tackle him with a pick six. But even talking about that too, like where it's like, hey, I got this terrible throw off, and then the Edelman and Amendola, like it's just, oh, it was just so good. Like I would have loved to have heard also from Malcolm Mitchell. I feel like one of the biggest what ifs in Patriots history, because huge part of that Super Bowl, even James White too. I understand going the route they did, and I like that we got the context that they just tried blowing the whole we worked for Tom, we worked for Bill, but we played for Tom, where it was more of a rallying cry than a shot at Bill Belichick, the
Yes,
one
oh my
from
goodness,
Danny
right?
Amendola.
So in the first episode where that was like where they, first teased that clip, it really did feel like a shot. And then you watch it and you're like, no. They're talking about how like Tom was going through it off the field, all of the
The mental
outside pressure was
struggles.
going. It was a really tough time. We rallied around Tom. Like, yeah, we worked for Bill, but like we played for Tom. And it was very specific to that season. You know what I
Totally.
mean? But it was just taken out of context, and it just looks like, oh yeah, we didn't even like Bill. We would only played for Tom. And it was like, no, that's not what that quote was said to be. And it's just like, yeah, that was disappointing. Just seeing it there, because I'm just like, oh, because then why did you put it there at the front to make it seem like it was something it wasn't? That's not cool.
I mean, the whole quote, if I read it, is like, I remember before the Super Bowl, Tom was definitely going through a lot off the field, and he had everything really swirling around in his head. But at the end of the day, Tom really was the heart and the soul of the team. We worked for Bill, but we played for Tom. If you hear the whole quote in context, you know it's not a dig at Bill. But that one quote, it was the it that that's I think where this Kill Bill narrative is coming when they put that clip as the forefront of the documentary. There were so many other clips we could have taken that highlighted the team as a whole.
Exactly it.
And this is almost, and I know episode 10 is going to come, and it's really going to be like, that's where it's going to, the narrative might come along a little bit more. But
But at the same time, I'm like, I have a little bit of morbid curiosity to kind of see how it's going to be handled, because we know that Bill, this documentary was filmed while Bill was still under contract with the Patriots, right? He was still the head coach. So I'm so curious to see how they like kind of handle, Tom's departure and then the last few years that we've had with Bill. I know it's probably going to cut off at like 2021 or something like that, but I'm curious to see like how are you all going to frame this? Because, if you opened it with like, oh yeah, team really didn't like Bill, and there's some episodes that make it like the Hernandez episode where it makes it feel like Bill is the villain. I'm just curious to see what it looks like when things aren't going well, because it's one thing to make that to frame it that way when they're winning Super Bowls and it's just they're going to AFC Championship games and everything works. What does it look like when the team is 7-9 and Cam Newton's the starter? Like, I'm sure it could be real easy to be like, yeah, Bill, this Bill guy, he needs to go. But I don't think they will. I'm just curious to see how they address it, and if Kraft has anything to say with regards to, keeping Bill but letting Tom Brady move on, because it's the one quote that kind of rubbed me, the only quote that rubbed me the wrong way, really, outside of the Rupert Murdoch interview, was that, and it really felt like a non sequitur because it was said and then like nothing really came of that either, but they were talking about Tom, right before when they were looking to draft Garoppolo, and Robert Kraft just says like, "Oh yeah, he Tom Bill was showing me like statistics of like Tom was in decline and his deep ball had just gone really down." All right, next scene, and I was like, "What the fuck?" Like, so I'm curious to see like if they frame it as like, "Oh, my concern, I guess, would be if." Is if Bob Kraft comes out and says something along the lines of, "Oh, I made a huge mistake keeping Bill. I should have kept with Tom," because I feel like that's going to stoke a lot of flames that haven't quite been doused in New England as of now, right? It's still very much, and you can see it in the way that people are reacting to free agency. To kind of wrap, take it all back to what we started with, it is still very much a division within the fan base right now where there are pro Bill people and pro team people, and the pro Bill people have a very anti Kraft alignment right now. Yeah. And I think if Kraft comes out and says, "Hey, I should have kept Tom instead of Bill," it's going to cause a lot of the pro team people to be like, "See, yeah, fuck Bill." And I don't want that to be the case, especially on a documentary where we're just trying to celebrate the 20 year run we had. So I'm that is my only concern. I really hope they don't go that route.
That's also not fair to say that.
No.
Because what pisses me off the most, I think, with all of this pro or this anti-Bill narrative is you want to talk about this team that went on to win 6 Super Bowls. There is one decision and one decision only that started the entire dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Belichick.
Yep.
And that is the decision to bench the $100 million quarterback and put in Tom Brady, the backup, who no one thought of. Had Bill been any other coach in the NFL, I would bet Bledsoe was on that field. But no, this is a different guy who had a different approach.
Yep.
And so, I think that's just what gets me the most about this narrative is it's like for 20-something years, everyone loved this guy.
Yeah.
Because they were winning. The minute things start to decline, the minute Brady leaves and there's all these, yes, there was bad blood. And what I think I love to hear from was Slater. Because this is a guy who loves both Tom and and Belichick.
Yep.
Yeah.
He has not been shy in the fact that, Belichick's, the coach he wanted to play for always. And he loved having Brady as the quarterback. And having him say, Coach Belichick didn't, held Tom to a higher standard than everyone else. But do you think there would have been 6 Super Bowl champions had that not been the case? Because in the words of Matthew Slater, what does that do for Tom Brady? That's going to add fire to an already burning
inferno. Yep. Yep. He was so balanced with the way he discussed it, talking about Slater here, where he, and obviously when they do confessionals, there are leading questions to ask so that you can get a really good quote. And so they're asking oh, do you think it pissed Tom off? And he's just yeah, but it worked. And so I'm I knew I loved you.
Right. The way I feel like episode 9 and 10 are going to go, I feel like we're going to get here about the Malcolm Butler stuff. I just hope that they don't glance. I know Super Bowl 53 is not the most entertaining one. Also, when you look at the season with Garoppolo getting drafted, look, they pretty much, I'm pretty sure Denver pretty much had their way with them in that AFC Championship game. Not to the extent of 2016, but I remember the 2013 one. It was all Denver all day. And even if they had won that game, they weren't winning the Super Bowl against Seattle that year. That's how that one was going to go. With episodes 9 and 10, I feel like they're going to kind of focus on the 2019 season. And I feel like that Baltimore Sunday night game is really going to get highlighted.
Yeah.
The one where, hey, look, Lamar Jackson's coming out party. But also, too, it's kind of that slow decline for the Patriots. Because after that Baltimore game, one game that comes to mind right away was them barely getting by the Dallas Cowboys in the rain in the November. And there's another
the Houston game.
Yeah, the Houston game, which I think was also a Sunday night game. Miami game, which cost them the bye.
Mm-hmm.
I think the way it's going to end is more about, because Sophie's read the book. I don't know if you've read the book, McGarvin, but this is a bit of a spoiler. Sophie, do you remember the part of the book where COVID had begun and I believe it was Brady went to Kraft's house or Kraft went to Brady's house?
Oh, yes, I read it so long ago. I'm trying to I can't remember specifics, but I remember that part of the book.
I just have a really good memory. And basically, it was just about them saying goodbye to each other, but they couldn't hug or they had to sit 6 feet apart, obviously, because of COVID and everything with the craft being older. I feel like they're going to emphasize that goodbye and just how hard it was to leave New England. And then they'll probably do a little montage where, show, hey, Tom went on to play 3 seasons for Tampa. He won the Super Bowl and retired. You'll show a clip of Belichick just walking and be like, Belichick had a record of this from 2020, and then he retired at the end of the 2023 season. And then it's kind of that Robert Kraft continues to own the Patriots and all this stuff. So I feel like it's going to be more of a wrap-up. This is a very weird way to put it, but a celebration of life where it's it's coming to an end, but at the same time, too, you're going to honor and you're going to respect what happened and what they've came from. This is also me being very hopeful that they go this route. I doubt they're going to go negative, but with the way that everyone and with how Boston sports fans have been acting lately towards this team, you're going to get people who absolutely hate it, and then you're going to get people who love it and find it the perfect ending. Because has this documentary series been perfect? No. Have we gone wrap-ups and have we learned a lot? Yes. And that's all I've asked for. Even with free agency now too. I know people aren't excited, but just know that eventually this team can get back to being better. When that will be, we don't know. But the one thing I'll say too is right now, this is Elliott Wolf's football team. All those reports of Jonathan Kraft and Robin Glazer running the show, I don't think are existent because there's no goofy spending out there. It's bringing back your own guys. It's Elliott Wolf being the Wolf of Patriot Place.
And then the other thing about that too is like I see so many fans who are like, yeah, so much for changes. They're bringing back all the same guys. And I understand like that frustration, but the guys who they're bringing back are the guys that should have been brought back.
Right.
This
They're good players. Yes.
is not something that's like, you know, oh, you're giving, you know, it's not a Daniel Jones massive contract where you're like, what the heck are you doing? This is like bring Kendrick Bourne back. He was the top receiver last year,
Born blessed.
including the ACL injury. You have Anthony Jennings. He dominated last year. Josh Uche is huge. Mike Wenu was one of the hottest guys on the market as an offensive lineman. You brought him back. Like all these guys, Hunter Henry, you needed a tight end. I could keep going. I'll stop though, I promise. It's not a fair thing to say that they're just bringing back all the same guys. They're bringing back the guys who should have been a priority to bring back and who were a priority to bring back. But they're also making some outside signings. There's still trading that can happen. This isn't over yet.
Nope, it is not
There's
over yet.
plenty of time. It is literally the first day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. I just kind of want everyone to like just shut the hell up for just like 10 minutes and let them cook. And if they don't, they don't. There's a lot of work to be done, but there's a lot of time to do it because this team isn't going to be ready in September. This team won't be ready in December. This team probably won't even be ready next September. Give them some time. And I know, real quick, everyone's gonna be like, "Oh, they have all this cap room. Cap room can roll over. You can roll over your unused cap space. If they don't use it all this year, it'll be there next year. Relax."
Because there's a lot of players that, hey, are going to be available next year. So even if the Patriots don't trade for T. Higgins, guess who's going to be available as a free agent next year? T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk, at 2020 class. Unfortunately, my guy Michael Pittman, not going to be available. Signed a nice little long-term deal with the Indianapolis Colts, but that's just that. One other quick note before we go. This is something of note for McGarvin, but it was someone's birthday a couple of days ago. So we just want to give her a quick little birthday shout out to little Sophie Weller over here. You know,
Oh,
just had
happy
her birthday.
belated birthday.
Yes.
Thank you.
I like when I first saw it, I was like half asleep on it, like half asleep when I was like waking up on Instagram and I saw it and I saw it again. I'm like, yeah, it's her birthday. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Thank
But
you.
just gonna make a quick announcement with the podcast, guys. We're gonna be back for episodes 9 and 10 sometime in the next few days, or maybe next week. But then after that, guys, we're going to go quiet for a couple of weeks before draft push really gets going. Just giving you guys a heads up right now for the listening public. But anyway, guys, another episode of the bag, episode 287 of YWC Football Talk has come and gone. It was a blast. Always, squad goals here. It was always fun. We'll see you guys next time. All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
Do, did, will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin and NFTs so you don't have to, and Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.